chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a program for you today. We're going to come open the program with a couple of different reports. One from Greg Reese, followed by John Bound. So here we go with Greg Reese. Reporting.
Johnny Vedmore recently published an article exposing the hidden history of the mysterious World Economic Forum, who is currently waging war against the world with their Great Reset. Founder and director Klaus Schwab's three mentors were the most influential people in America's thermonuclear deterrence program, as well as leading proponents of a one-world government. Henry Kissinger recruited Klaus Schwab at the Harvard International Seminar, which was funded by the CIA. During this time, Kissinger was focused on global governance and depopulation. But it was with the Council on Foreign Relations that Kissinger became a major player by wargaming psychological operations involving America's growing thermonuclear weapons arsenal and writing the book on nuclear weapons and foreign policy. John K. Galbraith was a highly influential economist who helped Klaus Schwab create the World Economic Forum. Galbraith was an economist at Harvard who traveled to Germany in 1938 to study land policies under Hitler's National Socialist government. From there, he went to work on an advisory committee for FDR's New Deal. After World War II ended, his work shifted into nuclear weapons. Galbraith was tasked with evaluating the overall economic effects of the wartime bombing. He interrogated Nazi war criminal Albert Speer and was sent to Hiroshima and Nagasaki to evaluate the damage caused by the nuclear weapons attack. By 1968, Galbraith had joined Kissinger in his pursuit of a one-world government. And it was during this time that Kissinger introduced Galbraith to Klaus Schwab, along with Herman Kahn, who in 1967 suggested subverting democracy by training a select group of global leaders, which later became the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leaders. Both Kissinger and Galbraith were heavily involved in the religion of thermonuclear deterrent warfare. But Herman Kahn was, as the New Yorker puts it, the heavyweight of the Megadeth intellectuals, and is commonly referred to as the real Dr. Strangelove. Kahn wrote the official military policy on nuclear deterrence and believed that if everyone had nuclear weapons, the world would know peace. By the late 60s, Kahn was pushing for a European Union and joined Galbraith in 1970 on a European speaking tour to support Klaus Schwab's recruitment drive for the first European Management Symposium, now known as the World Economic Forum. And while they were doing that, Klaus Schwab helped merge his father's nuclear weapons company into a company that he then directed to illegally build nuclear weapons for the South African government. In 1972, the Club of Rome published The Limits to Growth, which planted the seeds of the depopulation agenda. And while Kahn, Kissinger, and Galbraith helped Schwab get started, what really brought him the international support he was hoping for was when he introduced the ideas of depopulation. In 1972, the Club of Rome's founder was invited by Schwab to make the keynote speech in 1973. As controversial as it was, even Herman Kahn opposed it, the World Economic Forum suddenly caught the attention and financial support of powerful elitists everywhere and blew up to what it has become today. The article suggests that Schwab's supervillain persona is a deliberate marketing tactic to gain the attention from those who seek power and wealth to join Klaus Schwab as stakeholders in society. The author believes that the World Economic Forum is reaching its maximum level of expansion before its inevitable collapse, because eventually people will fight back. But they already know that, and all they really seem to care about is world government, depopulation, and thermonuclear war. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Very, very in-depth, good reporting. Coming up next is John Bound. More on this reset from different angles and different information, but really, really insightful also. Here we go with John Bound next.
The next clandestine move for the architects of the Great Reset, following the plandemic vaccine rollout that is slowly happening, killing millions as I speak, will be known as cyber warfare.
Imagine one day you woke up to find your phone was dead. Your bank account was empty, and when you turned on the faucet, nothing came out. You can't go to a neighbor for help because they're all in the same situation. You have no idea how it happened or even how you could figure that out. Don't start freaking out just yet, but this reality could be a lot closer than you might think.
And just as the plandemic was publicly forecasted amongst its conspirators months before its rollout, so too it goes with the coming cyber warfare predictive programming of the flip of the power grid kill switch.
Cyber attacks must be treated as a serious threat by our leadership at the highest levels.
Look, today my administration has issued new warnings that based on evolving intelligence, Russia may be planning a cyber attack against us.
We've already seen with the Colonial Pipeline and with many others, it's not just stealth of data. It's shutdown of critical infrastructure. And we've seen it with Colonial Pipeline. We've seen it with hospitals. We've seen it with factories that were shut down. And many of these attacks are activated by private organizations, private criminals, but some of these attacks are also behind them. There is government-sponsored attack.
But which governments have embedded what is known as the Swiss Army knife of malware into critical infrastructure? All signs point to the United States government.
It was looking for these things that are called PLCs, or these small computers that control things like factories, like the power grid.
What you see here is the code that is put onto the PLC, and this is a normal process. Code goes onto the PLC, turns the PLC on or off, and controls it.
As the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency wrote in their alert for the APT cyber tools targeting ICS SCADA devices, the Department of Energy, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, the National Security Agency, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation are releasing this joint cybersecurity advisory to warn that certain advanced persistent threat actors have exhibited the capability to gain full system access to multiple industrial control systems, supervisory control, and data acquisition devices, including Schneider Electric programmable logic controllers, Omron Sysmac Next PLCs, and Open Platform Communications Unified Architecture servers.
There is an energy producer in Texas who has identified a very serious malware instance in their system. This malware is not just in systems like a Windows, Vista that is sitting in one of these plants. No, it is in the Schneider Electric Programmable Logic Controllers. That's a PLC. It is in the Omron Sysmac NEX PLCs and the Open Platform Communications Unified Architecture servers. Some of this stuff could only be put into these devices at the manufacturer. And so when I asked our dude named Ben Protector Megawatts, he said, what does it look like to you? These guys look at this stuff all day long. They say, Russian? Because the Russians are the ones that people really do fear. If you got the ghost in the machine, these guys are good. He says, this looks like our guys. Without making a formal accusation, of course. Of course, there's people who are doing reports on it, but it is not the hold on to your ass because the lights could go out in Texas or New York or anywhere. This would be the one, and they're not making a big deal out of it, which makes me highly suspicious.
This move will plummet civilization into chaos and total submission unless you are one of the lucky few that has already made preparations. John Bound reporting.
Really, really in-depth and very disturbing reporting. And next up is Alex with David Icke. And David Icke speaks very, very deeply and insightfully about the censorship, the full censorship that we've been subject to. In other words, it doesn't matter the credentials you have. If the narrative you're stating is the wrong narrative, then you're out of here right now. So here we go with Alex and David Icke.
The plan is to reach the point, and Orwell talked about this as well, where no one ever sees or hears anything that isn't approved by the government. And that's the where we're heading. We're heading there because just as they can't hide it anymore because the changes they want to make, they're making in the world of the scene, they can't survive the exposure of what they're doing. So they've got this twinned attack of selling a tyranny and making sure that people exposing the tyranny are not heard. And so what you've seen, it started off, it's all stepping stones, the totalitarian tiptoe. It started off with YouTube demonetizing people in the alternative media. You know, they looked at the alternative media and they said, okay, how do these people survive? How do they do what they do full time? Okay, well, one way is they get income from YouTube videos, right? So we're gonna get rid of that. So that was number one. And you knew where it was going from there. And then, of course, the different criteria for censorship by YouTube has just got more and more hysterical. I was off it in the spring of 2020because of what I said about COVID. And so it's got more and more extreme. So now you're seeing professional doctors being censored and thrown off YouTube and social media for giving a professional medical opinion. And the common theme, of course, is not who you are, it's what you're saying. And it doesn't matter what your background is, it doesn't matter what your expertise is, none of that matters, it's what you are saying. And that's the criteria on which people are obviously being censored. And as this gets squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, the ability on the mainstream internet to criticize even mildly expressions of this agenda and this narrative are being censored. Now, what that tells you is actually an inversion of what it seems to be. What it seems to be is these people are all powerful. No, they're not. You don't censor if you're powerful. I'm not trying to censor anybody. I want the free flow of information. If people want to have a go at me, please feel free. You know, because we lose this basic understanding of what free speech is. It's the freedom to speak. It's the freedom to express your opinion. Ah, yes, even those I don't agree with, or he doesn't agree with, or she doesn't agree
David,
with.
David, stay there. Very powerful. Let's come back and get into this. But exactly, it's the free flow of energy. If you aren't letting speech happen, you're in a prison. Even the censors put themselves in a prison. DavidIcke.com, he is on fire. So there are a lot of great people that expose the globalists, like Barry Goldwater and Cleon Skousen and the John Birch Society, long before I was born. But the guy that really exposed the full depopulation agenda and really how it was an anti-human, really alien force was David Icke. He's with us right now for the rest of the hour on this special Thursday, April 21st transmission. So you were getting into the emergence, where we are, people waking up. But you don't want to talk about yourself, but the process, everybody's watching this. What is the vindication like to be there 30 years ago, top BBC show, coming out saying this, being ridiculed, laughed at by an audience of hundreds, millions watching worldwide. And then what is it like to be, because you were smiling then, you knew that you were right, to now be vindicated? Because I've had that happen in a similar way, probably not as intense as you, but overall just as intense in the aggregate. And I knew then I was right. So it wasn't about what was happening to me, because I knew it was happening to us all. But what is that process like? As so many other people have been ridiculed, they've been attacked for telling the truth, and they're vindicated as well. And so now that we enter this new system, what do you expect the enemy to do next? So two questions. What's it like to be vindicated? And then what do you expect to happen next?
Well, vindication is not something you were actually looking for. What you were looking for was to alert enough people that this was real, that it would be headed off. But it was clear that wasn't going to happen. As I said many times, this has got to get really, really bad before we turn this around, because it's got to get really bad before enough minds are focused. I've just been listening to your previous guest to see actually what a situation we're in. Because what you're doing when you're telling people what they don't want to hear, and that's what, you know, people like me and you and the alternative media have been doing over the years, is telling people what they don't want to hear. Who the hell wants to hear that a deeply evil satanic cabal is seeking to impose horrors on the human race? Who wants to believe that? So if you're telling people what they want to hear, which is what the opponents of the alternative media are doing, oh, no, don't listen to them. It's not like that at all. It's just a conspiracy theory. That's not going on. People, they want to believe it's not going on. So their door is swinging open. So the people who are telling them what they want to hear, it's all right, everything's fine, they're pushing against the swinging door. When you're telling people what they don't want to hear, you're pushing against the locked door. And so for that door to open, that people have got to see increasing tangible evidence in the changes in society and their daily lives that actually this is real. And while the COVID period has been horrific, it's also been a massive wake-up call for so many people, because the conspiracy theory, I loved a line I heard, yesterday's conspiracy theory is today's breaking news. I'm just so right. They're now beginning to see that this is not some fantasy. It's actually real. And the vindication is not really about, oh, see, I told you. It's about the realization of great tracts of the population now that this is real. That's what the vindication really means. And that's a fantastic thing.
Perfect answer. It's the shared community that we're finally waking up together. So the vindication is we're now together. We've got a better chance. People are waking up.
Yeah, it's not about, you know, an individual being vindicated so much as people seeing that those people were right, bringing them to the table. And bringing them to a point where they're no longer being scammed by being told a lie and it's all fine and this is not going on, when actually it is. And, you know, going back to what I said earlier about there comes a point where you can't operate below the radar anymore, because you've got to change society and the world of the scene. You can't manipulate towards it anymore. It's got to happen. So you can't hide it. And so this is, yes, a dangerous time for the human race, but my goodness, it's a dangerous time for these pillocks in the in what I call the global cult, because they're now on public display. I mean, we chatted about this right at the start of the COVID thing, when I said they've actually come into the room and they've just heard the door click behind them, because now they can be seen, and more people say, I mean, it's unbelievable. The number of people that stopped me, who I never would have thought, you know, from their background and everything, that they would ever have seen this, but they're seeing it. So this is a time of enormous optimism as well as...
I totally agree. It's not me bragging, but I go to liberal areas and eat at restaurants now, and they buy my food almost every time, and I get standing ovations and liberals coming up and apologizing, saying they were wrong everywhere I go now. I was downtown last night doing a podcast, happened everywhere. That's a bellwether. I guess that's what you're getting too, David, right? And when you're in England.
Yeah, I mean, in the early 1990s, and actually throughout the 1990s and across the millennium, you know, I was a figure of ridicule in this country, and further afield actually, but certainly in this country. You know, in the early 90s, I couldn't walk down the street without being laughed at. Going into a bar was, I mean, forget it, there was uproar. And so when people say people aren't waking up fast enough, I say you should have been around.
Yeah.
Years ago, there was nobody awake then virtually. You know, what's happening now, I can tell you from experience of seeing it develop, and you too. It's phenomenal. And all we need to do is keep building on this and building on this and building on this, because, you know, it takes a long time. Yeah, there I am, 1991. It takes a long time for the cracks to appear in a dam. You know, the water, the body of water is pushing against it, but it takes a long time for the cracks to appear. But when the cracks appear in the dam, to the dam collapsing can be a very short time. And
I know you don't want to talk about yourself, but we're going to go to break in a minute and a half. We've got long segments coming up. But you are a very interesting person. I admire you. I love you. I appreciate you. You're a great soul. You're an inspiration. Why were you woken up? Why were you, out of everybody out there, the detonator for the great awakening that's happening now? Stay there, David. I want to ask you. I think we'll talk about yourself, but I think it's from a societal, cultural, historical point, why David Icke got this first and was so right. We'll come right back with you, my friend. Wow. Feel so empowered with this great spirit with us right now, ladies and gentlemen. You have great spirits as well. We love you. We're going to be together for an eternity. We're not going to be stopped. We are beautiful, and you are beautiful, and we're not going to be stopped. And the enemy wants to shut us down, but we're not going to be shut down. Please support us at InfoWarsStore.com. Please get the great products, and don't let these Democrat globalists shut us down. Okay, I'm trusting in you, and I appreciate you. So I think it's important to know the origin story of David Icke, because, folks, I've read all his books, and the older I get, the more I experience, the more I know he's over the target. And there's nobody else like him. He doesn't want to talk about himself, but we need to celebrate people that are special and are leading the way. And of all the special people, amazing people you talk to, David Icke is undoubtedly the most important. And I think recognizing that is important for all of us as a model of what we can do and what we can be. And many of you will do even greater things than David Icke or I have. Others have done. We must do this. We're human. We're amazing. But as a spiritual being, as a creature of energy, we now know historically with science what you said 30 years ago is true. These things that are attacking us are obviously weak and pathetic. We're just not aware of them. That's why they're successful. But to understand how to be successful, you need to retrospectively, I never heard you speak to this. I know you went to Peru and like got a vision, and I've had similar things happen, but a download. But why was David Icke, and look, I'm not saying Anglophiles are special, or that the United Kingdom special, or the British Isles are special, but so many of the prominent people fighting the New World Order are from the British Isles, and so many selling the New World Order. It seems to be an epicenter of both light and dark, evil and good. So why would the two most iconic people, I mean, it's not bragging, it's true, fighting the New World Order agenda, David Icke and Alex Jones, why are we both Celtic? Why are we both Welsh? Why do we both come from the same place? I mean, what's going on there, David? What is your origin? Why have you been chosen for this?
Well, you know, the planet has a network, a grid, a plexus of energetic lines of force. They go through the planet. They go around the planet. Some people call them ley lines. They're called dragon lines in the East. They're part of ancient culture. And where these lines cross, a vortex is created, which if lots of lines cross at that point, a massive vortex is created. And this is where the ancients put their standing stone circles. This is where they put their sacred places because of this vortex, this power center. And from what I've learned over the last three decades, what we call the British Isles is is the heart center of the grid where most lines cross. And, you know, it's interesting you put up that, that shot there of the stones. There are more standing stone circles, more earthworks, more ancient earthworks, more standing stones, in Britain per square mile than anywhere else in the world. And so what they want to do, because this, the energy, the frequency, the perceptual, energetic state of this grid is impacting upon, the field of energy of consciousness that we're all interacting with. If you can control this energetic state and the perceptual state of the energetic field that we're interacting with, imagine, you know, like a computer interacting with Wi-Fi, then you can impact upon the perceptions of the whole population. There's so much mind control and perception control is actually happening energetically through frequency.
And I totally agree. And you had that vision in Peru when I finally got to Stonehenge off the side of the highway. Okay, big deal. And I walk right across this line. I get like energized. I have all this ancestral memory. And then the park ranger goes, only about a third of people have it. It's some kind of genetic code. But I watch people walk across that line and get hit by it. And then I tried to do it later. The message had already been, but it's something heavy. And so why is it then manifesting such good and such bad? Well, I mean, what's happening?
Well, you see, when you have these low orbit satellites, Mr. Musk, Mr. Free Speech, pounding this 5G and other Wi-Fi at the Earth, creating this cloud every inch of the planet. What are they doing? They're firing technologically generated frequencies into the field that we're all interacting with. They're changing it. They're impacting upon human awareness, human consciousness, human perception via this frequency interaction. And so who controls the grid in terms of its frequency state? If it's high frequency, it's going to influence people into a high frequency state. If it's in a low frequency state, it's going to bring you down into that low frequency state. And this is why the Satanists and other expressions of this cult, they target these energy points. They do their satanic rituals on them because they want to put very low vibrational energy into this grid, because that then starts to impact on human perception. So you've got this situation with the British Isles. This is, I mean, look at the British Isles, Alec. Look at the size of the bloody place. Why has it been such a central point in history? Why did it have the global empire on which the sun never set? Why has this global cult parked its ass in Britain overwhelmingly? Because it's the heart center of the grid. And they are seeking to control that heart center and thus the grid. Now, this frequency, these vortices, and the British Isles is a massive vortex, operates on low frequencies. That's what the cult's after. That's why they come here. And then there is high level frequencies of the vortex. And that's why the spiritual people come here. That's why those working to protect human freedom come here, because they're operating at different frequency levels of the power center. The common denominator is it's a power center. If you can dictate or control or influence the frequency state of the heart center, the British Isles.
Coming up next is Tucker Carlson discussing this Disney thing. There was a law passed recently in Florida that took away the rights that Disney had for self-governing in their area out there. And not only the state legislature, but the governor signed it into law. So they've lost a lot of their own self-governing rights And so it remains to be seen how much that's going to affect Disney. And that's because Disney started coming back against the law passed by the state that had to do with it wasn't that they were dissing gays or anything else. They just didn't want sex education and so forth and gender changing and all that to be taught in their schools. So the gays and all that on the left started drumming up this anti-gay bill, and Disney started chiming into that, and some of the employees at Disney had an uproar, went into an uproar about it. And so what Ron DeSantis came back and passed a bill with the House and the Senate that took away Disney's rights on self-governing. They had become their own government in their area. And so it's going to hurt Disney. It remains to be seen what the financial ramifications will be. But here's Tucker Carlson discussing that.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson. Tonight we told you earlier in the week about how the left is very mad, in fact, trying to shut down a site called Libs of TikTok. Why are they so mad at Libs of TikTok? Well, here's one of the reasons. Over the past half year or so, video after video has appeared on social media showing school teachers bragging enthusiastically about how they push their personal sexual politics, often weird and gruesome sexual politics, on the small children they're supposed to be teaching. Now, the students in question are not teenagers. They're kindergartners, first graders, kids who have no perspective on life and no power to fight back. So many parents saw these videos, in some cases on Libs of TikTok, and they were shocked. They had no idea that anything like this was happening in the classroom. Having some purple-haired loser in a nose ring convince your six-year-old to get a sex change is not why most people send their children to school. So they complained. The parents did. And across the country, Republican office holders responded by promising to do something about this. They made outraged noises, but then in very short order, they moved on to talking about Ukraine, which is what they really care about, not you. In the end, only one state really did anything about this. That would be the state of Florida under Ron DeSantis. Several weeks ago, the Florida legislature passed a law banning teachers from bragging about their own sex lives to small children. Now, news reporters went crazy. They described this legislation as the Don't Say Gay bill. But as always, that was a lie. This bill didn't even mention the word gay. Nothing to do with gays. Florida voters seemed to know that intuitively. Even most Democrats in Florida supported this law. The polling firm Public Opinion Strategies found out why they do. Quote, fully two-thirds of voters believe it is inappropriate for teachers or school personnel to discuss gender identity with children in kindergarten through third grade. Well, of course it is. Everyone thinks that. So if there was ever a law that accurately reflected public opinion, which should matter in a democracy, this was the law. But across the country in the state of California, Bob Iger was watching, and Bob Iger didn't like it. Bob Iger is the 71-year-old former head of Disney. He's a bundler for Hillary Clinton. He's got some free time and strong political views, so he promptly tweeted the Florida law was immoral somehow. In an interview later with CNN with Chris Wallace, Iger explained that preventing teachers from promoting gender reassignment surgery to kindergartners was, quote, harmful to children. Iger never explained how this was harmful, but it didn't matter. Over at Disney headquarters, his remarks caused huge problems for the company's new CEO, Bob Chapek. Now, by all accounts, Bob Chapek is not especially political. He's not an activist. He's a marketing guy. So his first instinct was not to get involved, not to comment on what was happening in Florida. And that seemed wise given how much at stake Disney has in Florida. They own a theme park in Orlando, you may have heard. That's an enormous physical asset that cannot be loaded on a truck and moved. So maybe don't mess with Florida. As Chapek put it in a memo, quote, corporate statements do very little to change outcomes or minds. He wrote that on March 7th, explaining why Disney planned to take a pass on this controversy because they make movies, not laws. But Bob Chapek's employees had other ideas. Whipped into a frenzy by their former boss, Bob Iger, Disney staffers demanded action immediately. And then, because he is weak and not especially bright, Bob Chapek caved to their demands. He agreed to hold a town hall with aggrieved Disney employees who wanted him somehow to take control of the Florida legislature. Here's how that went.
I hope you've all read my most recent note, in which I pledged to be a better ally for the LGBTQ plus community, apologize for not being the ally that you needed me to be, and committed to ensuring that our company lives up to its values. Your words have made a real impact on me. I understand that we've made mistakes and the pain that those mistakes have caused. And I know that our silence wasn't just about the bill in Florida, but about every time an individual or institution that should have stood up for this community did not. I want to thank the LGBTQIA+ Advisory Council.
Hey, Bob, what does LGBTQIA stand for? You have no freaking clue. That's not the interesting part. The interesting part of what you just heard was, your words have made a real impact on me. In other words, you now have full control over my entire central nervous system. You own my brain. Do with me what you will. And they did. Bob Chapek soon reversed his position, Disney's position, completely. Going forward, not only did the Disney Corporation fervently disagree with the law the Florida legislature had passed, according to Bob Chapek, Disney had decided to override the expressed will of Florida's voters and overturn that law. Quote, our goal as a company, said Bob Chapek, is for this law to be repealed by the legislature or struck down in the courts, and we remain committed to supporting the national and state organizations working to achieve that. Whoa! What? You thought it was an entertainment company, but no. From its headquarters in Los Angeles, the Disney Corporation had now decided it runs the state of Florida. So for people who want to defend democracy, which is a system in which voters get to govern themselves, this was quite a departure. This is oligarchy, corporate CEOs deciding what the laws should be. Yeah, that's their new position. But in the meantime, Disney employees set about trying to undermine the intent of Florida's law. If teachers could no longer promote transgenderism to kindergartners, Disney planned to step into the breach and do it themselves. Here's internal footage from Disney obtained by journalist Chris Rufo.
Last summer, we removed all of the gendered greetings in relationship to our life skills. So we no longer say ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. We've provided training for all of our cast members in relationship to that. So now they know it's hello everyone or hello friends.
Oh, so it's no more boys and girls. Disney World is now non-binary. Okay. That's the diversity and inclusion lady. You're not surprised. What is surprising is that the head of a publicly held company like Disney would announce in public that he's in charge of a state that we thought was run by the voters of that state. Well, in Florida, Ron DeSantis noticed this. He's the elected governor, and he decided to find out how does the system work. He decided to test democracy. So during a special session of the Florida legislature this week, DeSantis led an effort to strip Disney of what turned out to be a remarkable set of special perks that company had enjoyed for more than 50 years. You are not treated like Disney is treated in Florida. You have never been treated that well. So after the special session, no more will Disney World operate as its own independent country within the state of Florida. Yes, that's how they were governed, by themselves. And now going forward, Disney is going to have to pay its taxes. Oh, wow, just like everybody else. Now, if you've lived in this country for more than, say, 5 years, ask yourself, what's the political party that has always told you big companies should pay their taxes? Corporate tax breaks are bad. Well, of course, that's always been the Democratic Party. So you would imagine the Democrats in Florida would applaud a move like this. When was the last time you heard liberals complain about stripping tax breaks from big business? Never before in history. It's never happened. And yet it just did happen. These are Democrats in the Florida legislature. Notice they are on the verge of tears as they learn that the Disney Corporation might have to pay taxes.
The clerk will unlock the machine and members will proceed to vote. Clerk will lock the machine. Now it's a vote.
68 yeas, 38 nays, Mr. Speaker.
So the bill passes.
No. You may have sensed that the Democratic Party over the last decade or so has been captured by corporate interests. But you never thought that you would hear on the floor of a state legislature Democrats scream with anguish at the idea that a big company might have to pay its taxes. Unbelievable. But now very clear. What's going on here? Well, a lot of things. Here's one. Disney spends millions of dollars electing lawmakers in the state of Florida. But those lawmakers couldn't do their job in this case. They couldn't act on Disney's behalf. The law passed, and DeSantis signed it into law this afternoon. And that's going to cost the Disney Corporation a ton of money, which in turn may mean less money for the Florida Democrats you just saw shrieking in the video. So there was some self-interest involved here. But it wasn't just that, because it wasn't just Democratic office holders who were upset by the idea that an elected governor might be more powerful than an unelected corporation headquartered across the continent. The media were very upset, too. Very upset. Watch this.
If Ron DeSantis could pass an anti-Muslim bill for the state of Florida, he would. If he could pass an anti-CRT, if he could say it's illegal to say you're black, I'm pretty sure the guy would try it.
I mean, look, DeSantis has, this is a playbook out of Putin, and we saw where this goes.
It's very Soviet, and it's weird how Republicans, they keep tacking back to the old Soviet Union, and they seem to want to mimic the things that the new Soviet Union, meaning Vladimir Putin, is doing.
And even in our conversations about DeSantis, it's about how well they're serving him. The truth is, dehumanization as a tactic for politics is from war. Dehumanization is a tactic. It's being used right now. The Russians get their soldiers to rape children by dehumanizing them. Dehumanization as a practice is a tactic of war.
So just to be clear, and by the way, there's clearly some kind of inverse IQ test going on in the hiring department over at MSNBC. But here are the new rules. If you would like a big publicly held corporation to pay its taxes, then you're a child rapist. Obviously, you're a racist. You're like Putin, which means you're a fascist. But you know what else you are? According to Joy Reid, you're a communist. Ron DeSantis is, quote, taking us back to the Soviet Union. You're a communist if you want the company to pay its taxes. Now, Joy Reid went to Harvard, so we're not going to disagree with her. But we did feel a moral obligation to check that fact because it's a heavy claim.
So Tucker covers these issues very, very thoroughly. So coming up next is a special press conference that was held down in the subway of Kyiv, I guess to keep away from bombing and so forth, by Zelensky, President Zelensky, over in the Ukraine just recently. And this is a clip from the from CNN News. And you've got to listen carefully because there's some translation in behind that. But this was just today, earlier today over there, they're about 7-8 hours ahead of us, was a news conference, a press conference held by President Zelensky down in the subway. Here we go with that press conference. But listen carefully because there is translation in it.
Just moments ago, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky holding a press conference on the platform of a subway station. Zelensky addressing concerns about his own safety and possible attempts on his life by Russia. He also talked about opening up peace talks with Vladimir Putin. Here's a portion of what he said.
So instantly, this is the answer about the attempted murders. I'm not that afraid of that. My guards are afraid of that. I am not the one who's afraid. And my family is afraid of the attempted murders. Just to be really sincere. As for the topic of the meeting with the President of Russia, yes, I would like to stop to finalize the war. There is the diplomatic way and there is the military way. So any healthy and sane person always chooses diplomatic way because he or she knows that even if it's hard, it may stop the losses of thousands, of tens of thousands, and with such neighbors, hundreds of thousands and maybe even millions of victims. Victims, losses of people, we don't want that. And any leader, whether he wants that or not, he doesn't have the right to deny subjectively, because it would be a subjective decision to deny the diplomatic way. And it's also important for our partners, I may say, because we are constantly speaking about that and made certain steps to for the diplomatic solution of the military conflict and the war with Russian Federation. Our partners, both European and the partners from beyond the ocean, the United States, Canada, everybody sees that what Russia says and was saying during all these times, that Ukraine itself doesn't want to sit at the negotiations table and end the war. Everybody could see that it was the kind of a piling up effect. And Now, if we manage to do that, our trust, to the trust for our part of our partners to us is the highest level. But there is no trust to Russia. Those are not synonyms, those are antonyms, Russia and trust. Because they're just saying something and their words do not coincide with actions. And what about the security issues? Yes, security issues. Just a second. So I don't remember the second part of your question. I'm not afraid of meeting with the president. If you're about the attempted murders, let's wait a bit. I don't have the right to be afraid. I don't have the right to be afraid because our people showed that they are not afraid of anything. They are afraid for their children, that's true. People were stopping tanks with their bare hands and other Russian military armament, as well as our armed forces of Ukraine did, as well as our National Guard did. There are lots of security measures here, doesn't it seem to you? Well, but you will still know that you are in safety now. That is why a sane and normal leader doesn't have the right to be afraid when we are speaking about the state and about our independence. Thank you. Thank you. CGTM, right? If I pronounce the fourth row, please.
Так, CGTM.
Yes, CGTN. Mr. President, you've emphasized already your readiness of the peaceful negotiations with Russia. And the Secretary General of the UN is planning to visit Moscow and Kyiv. We've also heard that the United States and the Allies are sending arms and weapons. How can this weapon come to Ukraine? And simultaneously, Moscow says that you go on asking for military help and support from the NATO member countries, that this help won't help the peaceful negotiations. Could you comment on that? Could you repeat the beginning of your question? From the very beginning, if you can. Yes, sure. You're speaking about your readiness for the peaceful negotiations with Russia. We know that the UN Secretary General will come to Kyiv and Moscow and will be speaking about the peaceful negotiations, and they say that the United States and the alliance are providing weapons to your country. But Moscow is saying that your permanent requests of weapons only add fire to the situation, and this is only interfering the negotiations process. Well, thank you for the question. Of course, we will meet the Secretary General who will come to us. We'll communicate with him. It seems to me that we have done lots of steps for his position also to change, and his position to be strong enough as for the support of Ukraine. I had several personal meetings with him, and I am rather firm saying that you cannot balance between Ukraine and Russia. We are expecting for 100% support from the UN Secretary General. 100%, because 100% of truth is on our side and the war is taking place here. So I think that after the arrival, and if the Secretary General has time, I think that he has a very respectful status. He should definitely visit first the cities where there were tortures and where people were killed, and then he will find time for the esteemed and respectful colleagues from Russia. It's important for him to understand what's happening here, to have a very precise perspective which the Secretary General can bring and deliver to Moscow, meeting with the President of the state. Because if we just come to Kyiv and communicate, it's not enough. So I consider that, first of all, you need to understand what is taking place here. That is why lots of leaders, both like Chancellor of Austria, I always offered, if they go to Russia, to Moscow, first you should understand what is happening here. If you're speaking really about the help and support, not about political tourism. So I think he will see it here, and his opinion about Ukraine will be even stronger. As for the weapon delivery to Ukraine, weapon supply, we are definitely not interested in the opinion of Russian Federation, though they, since the beginning of war, were delivering it as well. You do remember the full-scale invasion, how they were fleeing, leaving the tanks. We are grateful for those deliveries. Thank you.
Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky there, I mean, in the midst of an invasion, an incredible display there, and a real first, an extraordinarily produced press conference taking place on a running subway platform there. Scott McLean is in Lviv. He's been watching it, as we are too. And Scott, it's striking for a number of reasons, because the president there is strongly advocating for talks with Putin. And he used the words like, only a healthy, sane person chooses diplomacy. So he's also challenging Putin, challenging his mindset, to ask him to meet, you know, with him essentially in some sort of diplomacy to end this invasion.
Yeah, Frederica, and if you listen to some of the questions from the Ukrainian journalists at that press conference, they seem to imply quite heavily that perhaps President Putin is not in the correct mental state, and that is why perhaps he is deciding to go ahead and launch this war despite the repercussions. I agree with you that what Zelensky is saying in his desire for talks is certainly significant, especially since Ukrainian officials have said in the past that some of the things that they've discovered that Russia has done, especially in the suburbs of Kyiv and some of the brutality there, has really dampened dampened expectations for talks and dampened the willingness for the Ukrainians to really engage in those talks. Because at some point, as the foreign minister made clear today, you don't want to engage with terrorism. That's the words that he's using, describing the most recent strikes on Odessa as terror. And so it's really surprising to hear that Zelensky is still very much open to talks, though it also sounds like he perhaps doesn't think that those talks will be easy or immediately bear much fruit.
Okay, to finish it out, we have Tom Holman being interviewed about the border. And there was an agent that lost his life trying to save some people that were struggling, almost drowning out there. And so the casualties are mounting along the border, and we pray for his family and our condolences for his family. But here we go with Tom Holman telling about the latest on the border with Mexico.
News at our southern border, a 22-year-old Texas National Guardsman feared dead after jumping into the Rio Grande trying to save a migrant woman struggling in the river. While the illegal immigrant survived and was detained by authorities, the guardsman never resurfaced.
If confirmed, it would be the first time a Texas Guardsman has died on the river since the state's Operation Lone Star was launched just over a year ago.
Let's bring in Fox News contributor and retired acting ICE director Tom Holman. Tom, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it. Just your reaction to this tragedy on the border and what it means.
It's sad. And it's what's very sad about it is preventable. Mm. He didn't have to die. You know, if they secure the border, if the federal government would do their job, then there'd be a lot less death on the border, because under Biden administration, under his policies, more migrants have died crossing the border on U.S. soil than any year I can remember in my history. That's 35 years I've done this. More migrants have died, right? Over 100,000 overdose deaths of fentanyl that come across the border. DEA says 95% comes across the border. So Joe Biden's policy, even though people say, well, it's much more humane than President Trump, they're not. More people are dying. More Americans are dying.
It's such a great point. It needs to be reemphasized that they are doing these policies under the premise that we're being so compassionate. More people have died, as you said, not just the migrants, but also Americans who are dying at record numbers we've never seen before, fentanyl, and not And that doesn't even count the human beings, the women and the children and the little boys who have been snared in this human sex trafficking trade. Representative Kamak says that this president from Florida, she says this president is the human trafficker in chief, that he is absolutely complicit in the sex trade.
Absolutely. This is the first administration that I've seen in my lifetime that's actively facilitating cross-border crime. And look, people attack me all the time in the Trump administration. How inhumane were you guys? Let me tell you something. When President Trump got illegal immigration at a 40-year low and the border was secure, how many women weren't sexually assaulted?
That's right.
How many children didn't die? How many migrants didn't drown in a river? How many pounds of fentanyl didn't get into the country that caused deaths from U.S. citizen overdoses? President Trump's policy not only secured a border, it saved lives. A secure border saves lives.
Yeah, it makes you really reflect on what type of policies actually reflect compassion. Tom, you and I were talking on, pleased to meet you for the first time in person today, even though we've spoken 100 times. We were talking offset, and you said there's just so many numbers involved in the border. So I hope you'll forgive me for throwing a curveball at you, but I can't get over the image of this Texas National Guardsman drowning in that river. What is the risk to law enforcement on the border? Border Patrol, Texas National Guardsmen, how many die in service trying to protect our border?
Look, over 140 border agents died in line of duty. But this border right now is very violent because the cartels are making so much money, not only on alien smuggling, but fentanyl and trafficking of women and children for sex trade. They're making more money than they've ever made. That's why you see the violence upticking in Mexico, because cartels are fighting each other for control. That's why you see guardsmen and border patrol agents being shot at from the Mexican side of the border. So, look, but it's important the National Guard are there. It's important that Texas governor, who's done more to secure the border than anybody in this administration, you think what the National Guard and DPS has done? They've arrested almost a quarter million illegal aliens. A quarter million. That's 250,000 less gotaways. They've seized 300 million lethal doses of fentanyl that could have came to this country. So it's important that they be there, because this administration has failed to secure the border. So the Texas governor, Governor Abbott, God bless him, because not only is he protecting Texas, he's protecting the rest of the country, because most of this fentanyl goes over the nation.
But Mexico is also getting destroyed. I mean, I was just down there. I can't believe how much the country has changed, because the cartels, as you said, are more powerful than ever. We're literally destabilizing our southern neighbor, which is only going to bring more problems to them and to us.
The most shocking thing of this administration is that we have lost operational control of the border.
That's right.
And that's just not Tom Homan speaking. Chief Patrol Agents, several of them have told me, we have lost operational control of our southern border. Our southern border is controlled by the cartel.
That's right.
The Border Patrol can't contain what's coming across. Just last month, they had a record number of crossings, 221,000, right, with 67,000 gotaways. 67,000 people enter the country. We don't know who the hell they are. And if you consider they arrested 42 on a terrorist watch list, how many of the 67,000 were in that list? Because terrorists, they tried to, escape apprehension. So
no.
That's scary. And 700,000 gotaways since he's been president. How many of them are criminals? How many of them are on the screening database?
Every terrorist knows it.
That and Title 42 goes away in a month, which means the flood is only still coming. It's amazing.
Great to see you here in Talladega, though, Tom.
It's great to be here.
Good to have you in person.
Yeah.
Great to be here. Great to be on set again.
That pretty well wraps it up for this evening. And things are not looking good in Ukraine. It looks like they're going to go into that steel plant. What they're doing is they're creating a siege there, so they're going to starve them out, and eventually they'll have to come out. And so that's what the final conclusion will be. Unfortunately, there are children down in there. There was some video earlier today about the children wanting to see the light and come out and see the sun, get out into the open. So this is really very tragic of what's going on down there. So anyway, we're hoping and praying for all those children. May God bless them and keep them. But good night, and God bless each and every one of you too. Bye-bye.